when I began my studies in social work, I was a really young Christian. I'd only been a Christian about, I think about 4 months, maybe even less than that. And so I didn't understand a great deal about what Christianity was about. Didn't know too much about what it even meant to be a Christian. And in my first year in social work, we had to do 3 subjects of psychology and 2 subjects of sociology. And my reaction to them was to be really hostile, because even though I didn't understand much about what it meant to be a Christian, what I did understand seemed to be really contradicting what I was being taught at uni. Like some of the stuff that we were taught in psychology seemed to be saying the exact opposite of what I was beginning to understand that the Bible was saying. And my response to that was to say, well, I don't know that I understand much of this Christianity, but I believe it's true, so the rest must all be wrong. So I took the approach of just totally rejecting much of what I heard at uni, which in lots of ways is really dumb, but I didn't know anything better at the time. And I didn't have the capacity to really evaluate things. I didn't have any sort of standards to evaluate things against.
Okay.
Squirt's really growing. I thought it was only going to be 6 people. Getting comfortable. I was just introducing myself and saying that I was a final year social work student, and that's really where I'm coming from. So I tended to reject a lot of what I was taught in class rather than try and evaluate things and take out the good points and reject the bad, because I didn't really know how to do that. And I found it really hard when I talk to people about psychology particularly, and I tell people, oh, it's all rubbish and don't listen to any of it. And I found it really hard to justify that sort of an opinion. But at the same time, I really felt that in lots of ways I was right, but I could never say why. I had the hesitation that I had with regards to psych. It wasn't until my 3rd year last year, and I started to study a subject called philosophy of social work, that I started to understand why I had the hesitation I had about psychology and sociology. And so it's mainly in that area that I'm going to be talking today. What have I got here? Yeah, just that I really want to emphasise that all I'm doing is sharing with you what I've learned. There's lots of things that I've still got to learn, and when I started preparing the seminar, I started to feel really inadequate that I had to do heaps and heaps of work, and I had to make it really, really good and have lots of good information to give you. And the Lord just challenged me even yesterday and just told me all you can do is share what you've learned and continue to learn and to grow. So that's what I'm going to do. A really key point that I want to emphasise is just that we don't see psychology and sociology as fields of knowledge in themselves. They're not whole fields of knowledge by themselves, but that they're disciplines based on and reflecting a whole lot of different philosophical positions. You don't just have this bit of information called psychology, but psychology is a subject that's based on a variety of different philosophical positions. And really what I wanted to do is just to understand that and to try and understand what some of those positions are. Because if we do that, then I think that the subject matter of psychology and sociology will be much easier to integrate with what we believe as Christians. If we understand where they're coming from, then it will be much easier to use what they're saying. So, what we're going to do in the seminar is firstly to consider what psychology and sociology are, and then get into some talking about what some of the fundamental philosophic positions that underlie psychology and sociology, what they are. And then I'll also present what I found useful as a Christian doing those subjects and what my position is with regards to psych and sociology. Might just begin by defining some terms that help us to know where we're coming from. This social psychology would be really helpful if we all know what I mean by psychology. And we can come to an agreement about that. By definition, psychology is the science of the nature, functions and phenomena of the human mind and conduct. And it comes from the Greek word psyche, meaning soul, spirit or mind. And with each of these, I want to pose a definition to. And the definition that I'd give of psychology is that it's a study of the nature of man, excluding the fact that God has said anything significant about the nature of man, and excluding the content of what God has said. Sociology is defined as the study of human civilized society and the problems involved in the fact that man is a social being. And I'd like to suggest that sociology, like psychology, is the study of men as they live collectively, excluding all that God has said about men and about the way that man lives. The third term, if people are taking notes, you can ask me to go a bit slower if you want me to. But this is...
Sociology
refers to civilised. Yeah.
How do you define that?
I'm
just saying where you draw the line.
I don't think I know.
It's not
all
society.
No. But I think the division is that sociology takes the civilised, organised ways that men live, and anthropology takes the more primitive approaches.
Mm.
More primitive lifestyles, isn't it?
That's what I mean.
I don't think so. No. The third term I'd like to define is absolutes. Absolutes are something complete and perfect, not merely relative and comparative, but self-existent and conceivable without relation to other things. You want me to do that again? You were just thinking about it. And the last term is philosophy. There are basically two ways to use this word. As a discipline, it's defined as the pursuit of wisdom and knowledge. But it's also a term used to speak of the way we view things. We all have a way of viewing the world. We mightn't always be conscious of what that view is, and we mightn't always be able to give it a name, but we all have a world view. We all have a philosophy of life. And that philosophy influences the way we think about things, the way we make decisions, and the way we approach life. So, to the seminar, I'll probably use the term philosophy to talk about the discipline of philosophy, the subject that people study, but also to use it as the term that we use to talk about the way we view things. Okay? The first thing I'd like to do... I keep saying that, don't I? The first thing I'd like to do... I'd like to introduce you to a man called Thomas Aquinas. I don't know whether anyone's ever heard of him. Has anyone ever heard of Thomas Aquinas?
I've heard of him. Mm-hmm. Our children fight again. They're Methodists.
So. Right. I have this theory that Thomas Aquinas... my theory is that it's through what he has had to say that the subjects of psychology and sociology exist. That it's because of him and a theory that he developed that there can be such subjects called psychology and sociology. So I'll tell you a bit about him. Aquinas was a theologian who saw the fall of man as affecting only the will, not the intellect of man. And he proposed that the intellect of man was totally free and autonomous, that men didn't need God to direct them, to show them knowledge and wisdom and insight, that men with their own intellects could understand the nature of the world, the nature of God, the nature of man. So his perception of the fall of man was incomplete. It wasn't covering the whole of man. And that's very significant. The significance of this incomplete view is that in saying this, Aquinas made the intellect completely autonomous. It didn't need to be dependent upon the revelation that God had given in Scripture. So So what he was saying was that men could view the world independently of the scriptures, and if their perception of the world didn't fit with what the scriptures said, then what they saw and what they said was just as valid as the scriptures. If what they said agrees with the scriptures, well, that was good, but their view was just as valid as what God had said, and it wasn't inferior, wasn't subjective to what God had said. The direct result of his thinking was the development of a natural theology, a theology that wasn't dependent upon the scriptures, so that they could make comments about God and speak about God without regard to what God had said about himself. And philosophy also emerged from that same thinking.
What
sort of time did you live? I know, I should have written that down. Around the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't give you an exact date, I just forgot to write it down. Now, Thomas Aquinas really gave movement to that thinking, but it was thinking that was already around before him. People had been already doing lots of thinking without subjecting their thinking to the scriptures. But he really just set things rolling. He started writing and speaking about that in such a way that it really gave power to what he was saying. And from that time onwards, you can see a marked change in the way that people thought about God and the way people thought about the scriptures. So there's a distinct point there around the time of Thomas Aquinas. Change things. So my thinking is that it was in freeing the intellect of man that psychology and sociology could come into existence. As I mentioned in my definitions of the two subjects, neither of them acknowledges that the scriptures have anything significant or valid to say about man or the society in which he lives. And neither of them acknowledges that the scriptures are in any way authoritative. In fact, psychology can be seen as an attempt man has made to understand himself because he doesn't want to accept that what is written is true. When man no longer looked to the scriptures to explain the complexities of life and human nature, he automatically had to set up his own system, of knowledge. And by definition, that's a system that is both fallible and relative, because men were developing it, and men are fallible and relative, don't have complete knowledge. For example, Freud's psychodynamic theory of human behaviour was accepted as authoritative for many years, and most psychiatrists and psychologists at that time accepted it as being true. But Freud could never make the claim himself that it was true. He could only ever make the claim that it was a plausible suggestion about the nature of man. He could never say this theory is true. Absolutely, this is the way men function, this is the way people are. And looking back now, it's really easy to see that some of the things he said were quite wrong. But at the time when he was saying them, people believed them as being true and based their practices on it. So it's just an example that by human insight alone, we can never come up with a theory that's absolutely right. Human theories can only ever be theories that are incomplete. Infallible. Knowledge that men develop can only ever be in part and can only ever form a theory. It can never be absolutely true and never binding on all people. Because of this, because of the fact that people can't develop completely true information themselves, there are a variety of philosophic positions that underlie current psychology and sociology. I'd really like to be able to go into detail about what some of the really key philosophies are, but I couldn't do justice to them personally by speaking about them in a few minutes. And personally, I think it'd be better if I just give an overview. And if people have got specific interests or questions, then feel free to ask them about different philosophies that exist. But I'll just give more of an overview. There's one main division in current thought between the rational and the non-rational. There are a lot of theories that are rational, and then there are a lot of theories that are completely non-rational. So that's the major division, and that's really what I'll talk about. Most of the rational views result in despair. Most of the rational views begin by saying that there is no God, and they take that to its logical conclusion and find that there can be no meaning in life because there is no God. Nihilism is an example of this. It's a view which presupposes that there is no God and that the reality around us is one of meaningless chaos, that we can exist, that we exist as a result of time plus chance plus nothing, and that only we can create meaning for ourselves. There's no basis for saying that anything is either right or wrong. What is meaningful for me is what is right for me. But ultimately, that view, when it's taken to its logical conclusion, says there is no meaning. There can be no meaning in life because of the meaningless origin of man. And so people who adopt that particular philosophy either act totally consistently with their philosophy and live a life of complete despair.
This is where we have to leave Sue and the talk that she has given.